This meeting of House Rules will come to order. The time is 9:06 a.m. on Thursday, May 8th. Members present are Speaker Edgemon, Representative Costello, Representative Vance, Representative Tilton, Representative Schrage, Representative Kopp, and myself, Chair Stutes. We have a quorum to conduct business. We are asking that staff members and members of the audience, please do not approach the table. If you need to pass a note, please pass it to my Chief of Staff here, Matt Greening, and he will be happy to help you out. I'd like to thank Lori Rowland of the House Rules Committee Secretary and David Monroe from the Juno LIO for technical support. We have one item on the agenda today, SB 183, an act relating to hindering the Legislative Budget and Audit Committee relating to the powers of the Legislative Budget and Audit Committee and the Legislative Audit Division and providing for an effective date. My intent is to hear invited and public testimony, consider any amendments, and look to the will of the committee. Starting with invited testimony, we have Senator L.V. Gray Jackson, Chair of the Legislative Budget and Audit Committee, and Chris Curtis, the state's legislative auditor. They will introduce the bill and provide a detailed overview, after which I will ask Ms. Curtis to briefly walk through the sectional analysis. I would also like to note that we have Legislative Legal Services Director Emily Nauman in the room to answer any legal questions that may come up. With that, would our two presenters please come forward to the table? Senator Gray Jackson.
And it's kind of tight here.
Thank you. And Ms. Curtis, if you would put yourself on the record, please, and begin.
Thank you. Senator L.V. Gray Jackson, representing District G in beautiful Anchorage. Good morning, Madam Chair, members of the committee. I just want to thank you for the opportunity to present Senate Bill 183. I have the honor, as you know, of serving as chair of the Legislative Budget and Audit Committee during the 34th legislature. But before we get into any details of this legislation, I just want to take a moment to explain how we got here and why this bill is necessary. In early January, I met with State Legislative Auditor Chris Curtis in Anchorage, in my Anchorage office, so that we can discuss the LBNA committee priorities for the upcoming session. One of the most pressing concerns she raised was the recent difficulty her office was experiencing in obtaining information from auditees, including challenges that were preventing completion of a special audit of the Department of Revenue's Tax Division that was requested and authorized by the LBNA committee in 2020. In the past, the Department of Revenue provided the legislature with organized summaries showing the total amount of additional tax, interest, and penalties assessed for each annual tax cycle. For example, please see the spreadsheets that are included in your supporting documents. However, the department now claims it is only required to provide access to raw data, not to compile or categorize information in a usual format as it had done previously. Recognizing both the seriousness of this problem and the amount of money at stake, I included an update on the special audit entitled, quote, Oil and Gas Production Tax Audit Process, end of quote, on the agenda for the LBNA committee meetings that we had on February 26th so that the committee could discuss the troubling development and consider what our next steps would be. Following an executive session that included testimony by Ms. Curtis, the committee authorized me to send a letter to the administration requesting full cooperation in assembling, furnishing, and providing to the legislative auditor the information related to the special audit. In that letter, which is included in SB 183 support documents, I respectfully urge the administration to fully cooperate with the legislative auditor, emphasizing that the integrity of the Alaska's oil and gas tax audit process is essential to the state's financial well-being. We sent that letter with the expectation of good faith cooperation, hoping that the department would fulfill its obligation to ensure that the audit would be able to move forward and complete it. Unfortunately, the issue remains unresolved, and the auditor still cannot complete this important audit, which concerns the oversight of billions of dollars in state oil and gas revenue. Madam Chair, both the State Legislative Auditor and the Legislative Budget and Audit Committee, we have appealed to the Department of Revenue for cooperation, but those requests have been repeatedly denied. Therefore, the legislature must now assert its constitutional and statutory oversight authority and fulfill our obligation to the people that we serve. The bill clarifies what should have been clear all along, that state agencies are required to fully cooperate with the legislative auditor and the Legislative Budget and Audit Committee, and that full cooperation means providing information not just in substance, but also in the form and format requested. This might seem like a technical distinction, but in auditing, the ability to request information in a usable form is absolutely critical. If the executive branch agencies can pick and choose what information to provide or in what format, they can, intentionally or not, obstruct the legislature's ability to perform independent oversight on behalf of the public, effectively hiding billions of dollars from the public view. This bill shouldn't be necessary, but here we are today. Either the Department of Revenue has already compiled the information requested in the special audit for its own use and is deliberately withholding it from the legislative auditor, or it has failed to do the basic work of calculating the tax, interest, and penalties assessed for each audit cycle. Frankly, I'm not sure which of those scenarios would be more troubling. The legislature needs to pass this bill so that we and the public can finally get the answer. So, Madam Chair, with your permission, the legislative auditor will now provide additional background and context and just walk the committee through the sectional analysis as you requested and answer any questions. But thank you again for hearing Senate Bill 183.
Thank you. And before we go to Ms. Curtis, are there any questions for the senator?
Yes.
Representative Edgman.
Thank you for being here, and I agree with your comments in large part. Do we know when these underlying statutes were drafted? Are these 1990s, 1980s, possibly the 1970s?
Through the chair, Speaker Edgman, I have to have Chris answer that question because I don't know.
Through the chair, Chris Curtis, legislative auditor. I believe our statutes go back to the beginning of the statehood. The even territorial had a audit function. So these are really, really old statutes that have been around a long, long time. Yeah, they've been tweaked here and there, but our authority has been in place for a long time.
Thank you.
Thank you. Seeing no further questions, Ms. Curtis, please put yourself on the record and allow us your presentation, please.
Good morning. I'm Chris Curtis, your state legislative auditor. So as Senator Gray Jackson stated, SB 183 clarifies that all state agencies must fully cooperate with the Legislative Budget and Audit Committee and Legislative Audit in furnishing, assembling, generating information in the form and format requested. So the need for this bill comes because the division has not been able to complete an audit. The committee, the LBNA committee, directed Legislative Audit to audit the Department of Revenue's Oil and Gas Production Tax Audit Group. So within the Department of Revenue, there is a tax division, and within the tax division, there's a group of executive branch employees who are responsible for auditing the oil and gas tax returns to ensure the state's getting all of the tax revenue that it's due. And when this group identifies an underpayment, they send a letter to the taxpayer identifying the amount due. That's referred to as tax assessments. They may also assess interest. So in your meeting packets is a copy of the audit request that was approved by the committee. And it's objectives 6 and 7 that have to do with reporting this tax assessment information. Essentially, we were directed to identify the additional tax, interest, and penalties assessed for each of the tax division's annual audit cycle, as well as update tax assessment information that had been provided to the legislature previously. So in your meeting packets, there is also some tax assessment information that was compiled by the tax division back in 2018 and presented to the Senate Finance Committee. So essentially, the 2020 audit request is asking us to update that 2018 information that's in your packets. And it's asking us to do it in a similar format that was presented in 2018. And that information helps you understand the various types of data. It's not just the tax, interest, and penalties. It's where it's at in the the you know, you can appeal process to informal conference or office administrative hearings. So it's a lot of information dealing with the tax assessments. And if you look at that data, you can really understand just how material it is. If you look at table one, that table, column F, summarizes the total tax and interest assessed for each of the tax years listed, and there's 6 years listed, 2006 through 2011. If you added column F up, and that's six audit cycles, it equals $1.3 billion. So definitely a material revenue stream for the state. Minutes from that December 10th, 2020 LBNA meeting that authorized the audit are included in your meeting packets as well. And that's to provide historical context regarding the legislative concerns that existed at the time the audit was approved. It was testified that the Department of Revenue would publish a memo summarizing the total tax and interest assessed after they completed an audit cycle, and they would make that memo available to the legislature routinely. They stopped doing this in 2019, and when the legislature asked them for this assessment information, they were told it's confidential, yet it had been routinely provided in previous years. Committee members were concerned about the lack of transparency and accountability over this executive branch audit function. And so this audit was approved to ensure adequate legislative oversight. While it was authorized by the committee in 2020, December, we didn't begin the audit until the beginning of 2024. And as the audit progressed, it became apparent that Department of Revenue was not going to be providing this assessment information. They stated that they were not required by law to do so. Now, the Department of Revenue's interpretation of the legislature's statutory authority and presumably the Department of Law's interpretation is that state agencies are only required to provide access to data, raw data. They're not required to compile the data into any type of format, like the tables you see from the 2018. That interpretation overturns longstanding precedent, and it essentially limits the oversight of the legislature. And the fear is that state agencies from here on out will refuse to provide or compile data in any type of format for future legislative audits. So SB 183, it clarifies essentially the legislature's oversight authority.
Thank you, Ms. Curtis. Do we have questions, Representative Edgman?
Yeah, so it's conceivable then, based on what you're telling us, that actual settlements could have occurred that you as a tax auditor would not be able to ascertain occurring. And it also, back to the opening comments of the bill sponsor, you know, it's the Constitution, it's statutes that you're subservient to, state law, but it's also professional accounting standards, right? I mean, in my previous life, I worked a lot with audits, and certainly at a different scale than what we're talking about today. But I know that you probably get audited, right, as a division, the Legislative Budget and Audit Division. So your standards are pretty high in terms of what you have to comply with. But I just sit here and think that, you know, at the macro level that we're at here in the legislature, that things could be occurring, and I'm not trying to create a smoking gun here, but things could be occurring in terms of settlements or things that are outside of the raw data that that you're getting, that some of the tables that we've seen in our bill packet, that you might not have access to. Is that correct?
Through the chair. I think there's some – I'm trying not to get into too details about the auditing standards and types of audits, but every year as part of our financial audit on the state's financial statements, we look at tax revenues. We audit tax revenues, and we design our audit procedures for the revenues that are coming in. We do not do a deep dive into settlements necessarily, except to look at the nature of the settlement and whether it's going into the CBR or the general fund. So we have a specific focus when we do a financial audit, and we do that every year, and we work collaboratively with the division. This is a performance audit, and every type of audit has different auditing standards it must comply with. So the objectives that are outlined in the audit request for this performance audit are different than the financial audit. So the degree to which we get settlement information is very high level, and we do look at that as part of the financial audit. The degree to which we could use that information to produce these tables, it's not detailed enough for us to be able to produce the information being asked for as part of the special audit. we would need the division's expertise to do that. But yes, we are provided information every year and work collaboratively with the division as part of the financial audit. But that information is not sufficient to do this performance audit work.
Can I just follow up quickly?
Certainly.
Madam Chair. But I guess, and maybe this is in the hypothetical realm, but there could be settlements, money that actually goes in CBR, that you're not able to track down and figure out how it occurred, when it occurred, things like that, right?
We can look at an overall settlement memo, and we do, to determine whether it was an administrative proceeding involving oil and gas, whether it should be in the CBR. We look at the information just for that fiscal year. We don't look at the assessment information. So a lot of things happen before it ever goes into before it's even settled. So, yes, we do have information about settlements that occur, but not necessarily for all the assessment information. We look at it every year.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Costello. Oh,
thank you. Thank you, Ms. Curtis. I was curious. So it seems like there's two issues here. One is the importance of the information that's going to be audited, and then the other issue, which is what this bill deals with, which is the format of the information that you're getting. So I was curious, could you let me know what you did receive from Department of Revenue? I mean, there's some material in our packet, but I'm curious if you've received information, and the problem is just that you're not able to ascertain from that information in order to fill out this chart, or do you feel that there's missing information?
Certainly, through the chair. As part of our financial audit, we do have access to the tax system. And when we provided the templates, we created a template similar to what you see in the 2018. We were able to provide or get certain information like the total tax assessed. We can see that. We put that in the table and said, okay, we did this information. Can you just take ownership of it, make sure it's right? Because whatever we do, they would have to take ownership to make sure it's reliable information to put in the audit. So we did the best we could with what we had and populated the template and gave it to them. But there's information you need expertise at to find, and we don't have that expertise to fully be able to fill out these tables. And that's where we said, we need you to do this information.
Just follow up?
Certainly. Follow up, Representative Costello.
Ms. Curtis, you were saying on table one, you actually created that chart in the past and had them verify it?
Through the chair. And that's a point of clarification. Thank you for that question. We did a 2014 audit of this tax group. And in that audit, there was a table that had tax assessment information. So essentially, column C of table one, or the third column over from the left. So, because we can see that information, we can compile that information, and we need them to take ownership of it. But it was printed in the 2014 audit. Now, this 2018 information, it seems to be confusion on the Department of Revenue, what our role was that. With we did not compile that information. We had nothing to do with that information except to help craft the template that was then sent over on behalf of the chair of LBNA and then to Revenue. Revenue Tax Division actually added columns to the template, and they populated the entire template. We had nothing to do. We didn't audit it. We didn't look at it. So seems to be confusion, although I've clarified that with them multiple times. They still seem to be confused that we had some type of role back in 2018 with that data. We did not.
Just one final question.
Certainly.
Thank you, Ms. Curtis. And I've actually been on LBNA at one point in the past, but my question has to do with when you start an audit that has been requested by that committee, is there usually any back and forth with the committee, or is it essentially you've been given that task, and then once you've completed it, that's when you go back to the committee?
Yes. Once the committee vets the audit objectives and the request, and they approve it, that goes to legislative audit. Legislators are not involved. We do not contact. We do not include legislators in the process at all. Auditing standards require that we maintain our independence in fact and appearance. So that is a nonpartisan, independent process. We follow professional auditing standards. And these particular standards are those promulgated by the Comptroller General, and they're called Government Auditing Standards for Performance Audits.
Thank you. Thank you. I have a couple other questions here from our members, but before we go any further, I would like to point out for the record that the Department of Revenue has chosen not to attend this committee meeting. They did send a letter that was in your packet. We received that not quite an hour prior to this meeting this morning, but it is their choice that they have chosen not to attend this meeting. And with that, Representative Kopp.
Thank you, Chair Stutes. Thank you, Chris and Senator, for being here presenting this bill. So just to kind of help us understand, you know, we're talking about an audit of which I think we can safely say there is no audit that is more significant to understanding the accuracy of money paid into the public treasury of this state than the one we're talking about. Does that be a fair statement?
It's significant, super significant. It's what we call a material account for our financial statements.
Okay, thank you. Second is the formatting question, which I think it's important for all of us to understand. So I understand records management systems and that people who are highly proficient in understanding raw data within a records management system, they are asked to pull together reports for people rather than just have someone come in and look at the raw data. It's just very difficult to pull it into an understandable format unless you are a technical expert in a particular, whether it's a tax system or a records management system. Maybe you could explain to us a little bit more of why formatting data is so important to understanding not only the assessment process, but how, as Representative Edgman was getting to, how a final letter of agreement or letter of settlement. It's a very different thing to look at a letter of settlement than understanding the assessments that came up to how a settlement occurred if you don't understand the data to begin with. So I understand why the formatting is so important, but I'd like you to talk to us and maybe everybody else listening up why formatted data is so important.
Through the chair. It's how it's communicated. It's meaningful. Formatting makes data meaningful. That's the bottom line. The department has explained that it's very onerous to compile the data. I think that's the key. We recognize that. We agree that it's going to take some time. There is a cost of oversight. It's going to take time to produce this information. The question is that time worthy of the information that it produces? In this case, we believe it is. We've always worked collaboratively. This bill is not going to change how we do our job. It's going to change one department. This is the only department we've had a problem with. It's going to hopefully result in us being able to finish an audit. But historically, we've worked collaboratively with an agency. We're respectful on the time it takes to produce data and to format data to answer the audit objective. And it seems fairly unnecessary that we have to be here just to be able to finish an audit. To clarify, I agree that it's going to take some time, and we've done what we can to shoulder the burden, and we'll continue to work with the agency to shoulder the burden. And work with them on their priorities and fitting it into their workload like we always do. But the bottom line is we can't do this information ourselves. We need the agency to produce the data.
Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Tilton.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Ms. Curtis, would you give me an idea of the hours of time we have a letter here from Department of Revenue saying how much time they feel like they put into working with the legislative budget and audit regarding this particular audit, and how much time would you say that they have put into it? They feel like they've spent hundreds of hours running reports and providing the information to the auditors.
I don't know. I see on page 2 of this document from Department of Revenue dated May 8th, 2025, through the chair. They say in 2024 alone, OGP spent 100 hours for DLA running reports, meeting with their auditors, going over information with them. Whether that has to do with the financial statement audit or the performance audit, I don't know. This is their data, they would have to say. The audit process is time-consuming. I'm sure we probably spend 400 to 500 hours on the financial audit, maybe even 600 hours, being able to finish the DOR's financial audit. It takes time. But I couldn't say how much they have spent with us. I don't have that data.
Follow up, Representative Tilton.
So can we go back just to a little bit along the lines of what Representative Costello was asking regarding the table that you're looking for, and it in the letter from DOR provided May 8th, 2025, it does give a background and indicates that in 2014, the legislative audit created the table and manually filled in the table, and then 2017 and 18, the same process. Mm-hmm. Legislative budget audit and inserted the information. Mm-hmm. And then in 2018 and 19, that the tax division tried to fill in the table, but it is not something that is easily done or done through the system that they have. And then it goes on to say that, you know, currently the system, there's probably more efficient ways to report that data that better reflect the reality of how the information is tracked and maintained. The requested format was not only duplicative but overly burdensome to compile the data in the form and format requested by the legislative audit. And by producing the tables on a regular basis, Department of Revenue cannot maintain the taxpayer confidentiality. Do you have any response to that?
Certainly. I'd love to respond to that through the chair. The 2014 audit, like I discussed, had assessment information. That's it. One column, audit assessments. That is not equivalent to the tables you see in your packet. Moving on to 2017, 2018, again, this was produced by the tax division themselves, as you can see in your packet. This is the tax division's information that they compiled and presented. We had nothing to do with that information except for creating the template that LBNA chair end up sending over to them asking for the information. We didn't audit it in any way or compile it. So I don't know. If you look at that information, I mean, it's information that you would want to effectively manage your division. I mean, it's tax assessment data. It's amounts paid under protest, amounts paid after settlement, not yet resolved. Table 2 talks about the amounts that have been appealed informally, whether they've been upheld, whether the appeals have been upheld, really important information, and then whether they've been appealed to Office of Administrative Hearing, whether that's been upheld. I mean, that's how you can find out whether your laws need to be fixed going forward. And then the amounts paid under press, that stuff's really important. I don't understand why it's not already being readily available. So when they talk about different formats, mm-hmm. what other formats? Is this information, if they want to produce a report that has this data, my understanding is that doesn't exist. Their reports, while they say there's these reports we can pull or we've pulled, then they say that it's onerous process to get the information. So I'm a little confused about those conflicting statements.
Sure. Follow-up?
Certainly.
And lastly, I mean, I'm just trying to understand.
Sure.
Because it seems like there's a difference of opinion here.
Yes.
And I am just trying to understand where mm-hmm. this is coming from. Because the last statement is that the department feels like they have been cooperative and they have provided information.
Yes.
But from your standpoint, they're not providing the information in the format that you want the information in? Is that what I'm...
Through the chair, they are not producing those tables.
Thank you.
That's... Yeah.
Thank you. Representative Vance.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Ms. Curtis. I'm just looking through all of the documents from 2020, and based upon the minutes in 2020, you outlined that most of the issues that you were addressing, the information was privileged. And then reading the response from 2025 from DOR, they talk about it being privileged. And then in 2020, the Department of Law talks about the information being privileged. Mm-hmm. And I understand that there's a precedent, and you're saying if it wasn't an issue before, it shouldn't be an issue now. I get mm-hmm. that. But mm-hmm. I have two questions, and one is a lot of the complaints here is that this is privileged information. That's why they can't give it to you in the format that you're requesting. And the question with that mm-hmm. is, would the bill as written address that? Mm-hmm. And then the follow-up is, do you have a legal memo from our legislative legal that addresses the issue of confidentiality and what their perspective is?
Thank you. Their two pages that they have does not talk about, unless I missed it, because I just read it really quickly, I just got it, talk about privilege. The letter that they attach, the May 12th, 2020 letter that they attach, the title is Provision of Documents to Legislative Audit for Financial Audits. This is a performance audit, different auditing standards, totally irrelevant. However, this was written in response to our inability to obtain information that is in their settlement files. It's a totally different issue, and we do have objectives about that, and we are working with the committee on being able to get. And so the information they reference is confidential, which is different than privileged. Okay. And our statutes provide legislative auditor access to confidential information. Whether I can publish it in a public report is a separate issue. And that's I definitely clarified with them that if I have confidential information and the statutes make a confidential issue, I will not be able to publish it, and I'll work with the division to make sure they're in agreement. We have a shared vision of what's confidential and can't be produced or published.
Follow-up, Representative Vance.
So, thank you for that clarification. Can you explain more what privileged is? Because the word privileged was used in your minutes when you were in 2020 when you were originally talking about the issue of not getting the information. Can you just
sure.
explain, give an example of what privileged is?
Sure, through the chair. So at that meeting in 2020, I haven't read the minutes, but I know at that point we were struggling with our financial audit, as you see with this other document that was attached, about, it had to do with about tax, about trying to figure out whether the Department of Revenue was using tax credits to offset their settlements, mm-hmm. which is illegal, because if it is an assessment, and if there's a tax assessment, it becomes an administrative proceeding. Those monies have to be deposited into the CBR, and you cannot offset tax credits against it. So we were seeing indications that was happening, and we were trying to get in and review information, and we were being told you cannot look at that because it's privileged. And the two privileges they're enacting is attorney-client privilege and due process privilege. So that's what we talked about in 2020, which... there are other audit objectives on that audit request that deal with that specific topic. So it was in terms of different objectives of the audit, not these two objectives.
Follow-up, Representative Vance.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And the reason that I bring it up, and I'm on page 6 of okay. those 20 minutes.
Okay.
We're halfway down the page, Senator Stedman brings up, you know, it's the conversation with you, and Senator Stedman talks about the documents justified in proper form and reported within the financial statements. And the word proper form is what stands out to me, that the changes that we're making in statute is for the information to be in the form that you request. So that's why I'm making the connection here, is that he was highlighting that in a way in the conversation. So I'm just trying to get understanding of tying this all together, because by having this bill and changing the statute, it's going to be amending your authority for all of these audits. Am I right?
No, that's you're absolutely true. So through the chair, if I can read the sentence out for everyone who's listening to, Senator Stedman stated his concern that, quote, there's nobody watching the hen house, unquote, and billions of dollars are involved. He said the public and the legislature need to have assurance that the transactions are documented, justified in proper form, and reported within our financial statements so that the legislature as policymakers can understand the benefits and possible pitfalls of any policy pursued. So I take out of that statement is he was talking about just in the proper accounts on the financial statement. I don't draw a line between his word form and format of changing my statutes. But you do make a point that this does change it. I say it clarifies it, because I don't see us doing anything different than we have in the past. I do see increased half of Department of Revenue's response to the audit and are be able to finish it. But honestly, we have assumed, we have been going through the precedent that we had this authority all along. And so this is just clarifying, not, from our perspective, expanding our authority at all.
One more follow-up.
Follow-up, Representative.
Thank you. To my other question, because we have heard we have in our packet information from the Department of Law and Attorney General and their reasons to not give you what you're asking for specifically. Has our legal team provided memos? Because I don't see anything here. Have they provided something to LBNA in response?
Through the chair, I didn't see the need to. I rebutted this in detail. And I'm disappointed that the Department of Revenue and the Attorney General would release this without my rebuttal. I wrote a rebuttal a week after this, citing pages and pages of audit standards to clarify what I have to do, what our agency, what CPAs have to do in completing the audit. So to release this and not release my rebuttal to it, I just think is in bad form. And I also encourage the Department of Revenue and the Department of Law that when they want to reference audit standards, that they cite the exact standard instead of making these general comments about what they interpret auditing standards to say. Or they need a better consultant that knows auditing standards.
Thank you. Before we go on, I would like to note that a couple minutes ago, unfortunately, it's not Commissioner Crum, but we do have a representative from the Tax Division of the Department of Revenue, and that would be Destin Greeley, who is Oil and Gas Tax Revenue Audit Supervisor online for the committee's information. Representative Edgman.
Yeah, before I get to my question, I just want to put things in context. The recent round of questions involve performance audits that are requested by the LBNA, right?
Mm-hmm.
So these don't occur every year. They don't occur every agency. I mean, they occur sporadically, I guess. Is that the sort of maybe a proper characterization? Every now and then, right?
Through the chair, whenever the LBNA committee requests them, I think we've got about four or five right now in our hopper.
And I think context is so important, because as I look at the bill before us, why would we not, you know, under the auspices of government efficiency, want to give you or us as legislators, policymakers, a separate branch from the Department of Revenue and all the other state agencies, the ability to give, to sort of codify what you have already been working under, but to insert into the bill, into Title 11, in the form or format requested. And further on in Title 24 and so forth. But that seems to me to give the department a better idea of what to provide you, and you're not asking them to reinvent the wheel. You're asking them to give you data that allows you to do your job that they should already have in hand. So when I look at the fiscal note that says indeterminate, you know, what is the cost of good government? That's what I ask. And if there's potentially you know, a boatload of money involved in these settlement cases in the Department of Revenue that we have not been able to sort of ascertain. Why would we not want to give you the tools to do your job? And I would pose that question to, and unfortunately we don't have the head of the department who should be here at this committee in person in front of us. Why would we not, you know, under the guise of good government, of efficiency, of accountability, all of those sort of buzzwords give you the tools you need, which in essence gives the department the tools they need to comply with what you're going to be asking of them. And I guess I would close that I read from the Department of Revenue letter that we just recently got here this morning. Senate Bill 183 would give basically legislative budget and audit permission to force other state agencies to create specific work products for them. If I could narrow my editorializing to that one question, is that true? Would you be asking them to go out and create work products that are separate from what they've already created if it doesn't involve summarizing something that shouldn't be that onerous in terms of work, you know?
Thank you for that question through the chair. My experience on what the LB&A committee asked me to review, it's generally in terms of making sure that a state agency is fulfilling their statutory purpose or their regulations. And that means that they already have work product, or they should have work product there for us to evaluate. So I don't see this as being very onerous on an agency. But this is a good example where they don't agree. And it will take some of their time to produce this information. And whether they should already have it or not is a gray area. But I do recognize that they will have to spend time doing this. And we will work collaboratively with them on that, as we always do.
And then, Madam.
Follow up, Representative.
Chair, if I could close with just reading from the Constitution. The legislature shall appoint an auditor to serve at its pleasure. He shall be a certified public accountant. The auditor shall conduct post audits as prescribed by law and shall report the legislation to the governor. So you're required to do this by the Constitution, not just by state statute or by accounting standards. Is that correct?
Through the chair, absolutely. And my position is a constitutional officer.
Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Edgman. Representative Costello.
Thank you, and I would like to hear from the department's representative online. You said we had somebody?
Yes, we do. We have Destin Greeley.
Thank you. So when I read the letter from the department, it sounds like, and they mentioned that the tables don't mechanically align with how they keep that information and how they compile it. So I was curious if the information can be provided or there's another way that information can be provided that aligns mechanically with how they keep that data.
And then it's to Mr. Greeley. Mm-hmm. Mr. Greeley, did you hear the question?
Yes, through the chair, my name is Destin Greeley, and I'm the Oil and Gas Production Tax Audit Supervisor.
Thank you. I'm sorry for that. Did you hear the question that was asked by Representative Costello?
I did, through the chair. I believe the question was, we stated that in the letter that the tables that are requested don't mechanically align with the information that we have in our tax system, but we do have other variations of being able to provide the same information and have provided the same information.
Did that answer your question, Representative Costello?
So did you just say you have provided the information that the auditor requested, just in a different format? Is that what you responded to?
We have. So I guess it depends on the information we're talking about. We have provided a list of every assessment, the dollar amount of every assessment, the total interest that's been provided. We don't have, so the tax system that we have has interest calculated, but it doesn't have interest associated with a specific thing. Like, for example, when we issue an audit, we have interest associated with that audit, but it kind of calculates it as a total. So it looks at the total tax due and the total interest for that tax, and the tax due could include what the taxpayer filed, what they amend, what we've assessed in an audit, what's been assessed in an ICD. So it's kind of a running calculation of interest. And so what was done by the legislative auditors in the past is they took all of our assessment letters and compiled those tables by the assessment letters. And they, in 2014, they physically went through a filing cabinet that we had at the time. Now, of course, it's all electronic. But at the time, they went through the filing cabinet to compile that information.
First, I do have a question, Ms. Greeley. How long have you worked for the Department of Revenue?
I've been with the Department of Revenue Oil and Gas Production Tax Group for 20 years.
Okay, thank you. And Ms. Curtis, would you like to respond?
Yes, certainly. Through the chair, we did compile, as I already discussed, in the 2014 audit, there was a table of audit assessments, which is one table, one column on all of these tables. We can obtain that information, and we have already populated when we sent those templates with the information we were able to get. So we took that work off the agency. So it's the other information that we need them to produce.
Ms. Curtis, can you be specific? Can you tell me what information that you have not received that you have requested? And Ms. Greeley can then hear this as well.
Through the chair, I wish I had my staff here with me, but it's my memory that we were able to fill in, like, tax. If you're looking at this tax tables for everyone, if they have it in front of them, if it's table one, tax revenue filed by all taxpayers, we have that information. Tax revenue audit, I think we have that information. And tax assessed, I think we have a lot of that information. The rest of it, we need them to fill out. And
so
that includes all of table two.
So what I'm hearing you say, Ms. Curtis, is you have no idea what taxes have actually been paid out of what's been assessed.
And appealed, and where it's at in the appeal process. That's really...
Which would seem to me could be a critical issue and a lot of dough.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, thank you. Do we have other questions? Representative Cox.
So that was very clarifying. Thank you. So would it be fair, Chris, I want to call you by your last name, but I forget, to say that it's not only material information you're looking for, but you're looking for information with context, that which is the whole point of the tables.
Mm-hmm.
And information without context is meaningless. So you need material information that's missing, and then the information that is given to be delivered in context.
Mm-hmm.
Is that
yes,
fair?
To the chair. And then once we have that information, then we start asking questions about it.
Thank you.
So this is Representative Stutes, and I have a question for Ms. Greeley. What seems to be the issue with providing the auditor the amount of money that has been collected and where it's been collected from?
Am I still online? Sorry.
Yes, you are.
Okay, thank you. I believe it's all been provided. So we actually provided a transaction summary that includes every single transaction that has happened, so all payments, all audit posting amounts, all appeal posting amounts, everything, all in an Excel spreadsheet. So all of that information has been provided. I think the key that's kind of the missing part is we provide them a list of all of our appeals, but there's not a dollar that is associated with our audit. So somebody would manually have to go in and say, okay, well, we assume that, you know, we assess X dollars in an audit, and this company appealed, we're going to assume that they appealed, you know, 100% of that audit. And so that correlation hasn't been done, but I think all the numbers that we have been provided.
Ms. Curtis, have you received an accounting of all the revenue that has come in to DOR for oil and gas?
Through the chair, we for our financial audit, we look at all of the revenue, the tax revenue. For this specific table, it's my understanding that we need some expertise. We need their expertise to put those information in the right columns. You need to have some ability to be able to populate the table.
So what seems to be the problem with that, Ms. Greeley?
I believe it's just the work hours that go into it, and this is a new work product, so it's not something that we can run. We have the raw data. We've provided them the raw data. It's a matter of us creating a new work product for them or them creating it. And in the past, they have done that for us. The two reports that I believe were issued to the legislature were done by us, but prior to that, legislative audit always compiled this information.
So I don't mean to be combative here, Ms. Greeley, but it appears it's only been since about 2018 that the auditor has had these difficulties, and you're telling me you've been there for 20 years, so I'm having a hard time understanding why you, as a tax division auditor, supervisor, can't provide the information that has historically been provided in order to complete these audits.
So the information that's being requested isn't captured in our tax system right now. So it's not something that we maintain. We have our tax assessment letters, and those have been provided. All of our assessment letters have provided. All of our transaction details have provided. They have complete access to everything, and the auditor that we work with has never had any issues with us providing information. So it's creating this new work product that is very time-consuming, and it's kind of trying to put a square peg in a round hole for us. So some of the information doesn't totally align with how the tax tables were originally designed, and they were designed before we really had our tax system and the reports from our tax system that we can use now.
Well, Ms. Greeley, I'm not going to take up more of this committee's time with my questions, but what I'm going to tell you is I'm not buying your story, and this is a huge red flag for me. I'm having a hard time understanding why, when in years past, this can go without problems, and now you're saying, well, we don't compile that kind of information. As a taxpaying citizen of Alaska, that's when you've got hundreds of millions of dollars involved, I'm worried. But with that, are there other questions for Ms. Curtis before we go into the sectional? No. Seeing that, Ms. Curtis, maybe you could walk us through the sectional of Senate Bill 183.
Certainly. Again, Chris Curtis, legislative auditor. So sections 2 and 3 of the bill are the heart of the bill. These sections amend Title 24, which is the section of statute that outlines the powers and duties of the LBNA committee and legislative audit. So these two sections clarify that an auditee is required to cooperate by providing information and data in the form and format requested by the committee and the auditor. So that's basically the heart of the bill. There's some conforming changes. Sections 1 and 4 amend statutes that were designed to compel cooperation. So Section 1 are conforming changes to the criminal statutes that make hindering the legislative budget and audit committee a crime. So basically those changes are made so they can reflect Sections 2 and 3 changes. And then Section 4 are also conforming changes but are made to the personnel law that reflect, again, the changes made in Sections 2 and 3. Section 6 says the provisions of this legislation take effect immediately, and Section 5 amends the uncodified law to clarify that the new criminal standards in the legislation are not retroactive but will be applied after the effective date.
Thank you. Are there questions for Ms. Curtis? Representative Vance.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I'm just looking at the practicality on Section 1 that this is an offense, that it's the legislative branch telling the executive branch, you've created an offense. But it would be the executive branch who has to execute the law. And right now, we have a difference of opinion. Mm-hmm. Who is going to enforce this law if there's an offense, a prosecution has to be made? I feel like this almost, how do you see this walking out in a very practical sense?
Through the chair, really good point. This has been there for a long time. Legislature put this in place to help provide a hammer to ensure that we could get cooperation. It's been completely ineffective. But do note that this statute says there's an out if the person did reasonably believe that the action or failure to act was legally justified. So if they believe they're legally justified in not cooperating, then it's not a crime. So it's again, oftentimes the disagreements are with the Attorney General, who'd be responsible for, yeah. But it's there, and we need to fix it, so it reflects the changes made in Sections 2 and 3.
Follow-up, Representative Vance.
So the impact of this bill is, obviously, it's been very clear. You're trying to get them to just fill in the forms that you request. Let's just say we pass the bill, and we're still at this standoff. Then what?
I think that's a call through the chair to Ledge Legal.
Thank you. And we will do that. Ms. Nauman, if you could come up and respond to Representative Vance, please.
Good morning.
Morning.
For the record, excuse me, Emily Nauman, Legislative Legal Services, through the chair to Representative Vance. The enforcement, as you've identified, the enforcement options are pretty limited here. In these big clashes between the executive branch and the legislature, it's quite often an issue that gets resolved in a court. So that's how I would expect this would escalate, is to the judicial system.
Follow-up, Representative Vance.
Thank you, Madam Chair. In the key words that are being provided that's new in the statute is form and format. To me, this feels very broad. Do you think this is going to, if this issue were to go to the courts, are the words form and format going to give us, the legislative branch, enough legal standing to be able to justify the request with these particular forms that they are not filling out? Do you think the courts are going to say, yes, it's clear, it's right here in the statute, they didn't do it, or do we need to be more prescriptive in our language?
Again, for the record, Emily Nauman, Legislative Legal Services, through the chair to Representative Vance. This bill was drafted in response to this issue, as it's pretty clear here today. And it's my belief that it will resolve the issue if the department complies with the law. Of course, you know, they've shown some resistance to complying thus far. And so I wouldn't doubt if they make an argument. And again, we would probably end up in litigation trying to figure out exactly what those words mean. It's difficult to be very prescriptive in statute. And when we do, we run the risk of, you know, possibly discarding other good outcomes we're looking for by being so specific in one instance. You know, if the legislature wanted to require the department only in this specific instance to produce this information, or only to provide this information every year, the bill would look very different. It would be specific to this information this year, or this information produced every year. But it's my understanding that this bill is designed to solve a little bit bigger problem of the resistance that the legislative auditor has been getting from the department more holistically.
One more legal question?
Certainly.
Thank you. Many times in our legal discussions between the legislative and executive branches, the issue of the separation of powers comes up. And what do you think would be the argument around this particular statute with the separation of powers?
Through the chair, to Representative Vance, that's a great question. You know, the legislature is limited in its ability to control the executive branches, as everyone in this room is aware. And certainly that limitation could include directing employees who are under the purview of the governor to do specific things. And it is conceivable that a court could find a request under this statute goes too far. Like, you know, the legislature has reached too far into the executive branch, directed them to do something that usurps the governor's power to control his employees. This is a really interesting case here, because there's another level that we don't see at Ledge Legal a lot in the separation of powers, in that the legislative auditor is a constitutional creature designed to check the power and oversee and help the legislature oversee the power of the executive branch. So there's this additional twist that we don't normally see, and I think would give a court would be convinced would give the legislative auditor a little more authority to reach into the executive branch and require that information be provided in a form and format that's digestible to the legislature in its role as an oversight function. I think that, like I said, it is possible under the statute that the division or the committee could push a little too far, and it would be up to the division and probably more authoritatively the Legislative Budget and Audit Committee to use discretion in the type of things they ask for in the executive branch. And I think that the additional check is sort of the role of the audit function itself. As I understand it, and Chris could speak better to that, you know, it's not really the legislative auditor isn't going out and asking employees to produce or retrieve information they don't already have. It's really about producing information they do have in a form that's functional.
Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Benjamin.
Yeah, I think the key phrase for me in this entire discussion is precedence. Because what I've heard the legislative auditor tell us is that they want to continue doing business that they've sort of been tasked with doing, but they're being stymied by a state agency who, as they describe in their letter to us, have apparently talked to other state agencies because they speak for other agencies, given that Senate Bill 83 would force other state agencies to create specific work products for them. I guess I'd wonder how revenue would know that the Department of Commerce would need specific work products or Department of Military and Veterans Affairs and so on and so forth. And that's stated a second time on page 2. If enacted, Senate Bill 83 would represent a significant shift in work burden from the Division of Legislative Budget and Audit to other state agencies, including Department of Revenue. So we don't have that context here at the table because the executive leadership of the department couldn't be here. And the executive leadership of the administration couldn't be here on this very important issue. Being that as it may, it just seems to me that this bill is about precedence, but it's also about clarity, right? It puts what's already been happening into statute so that we can do our jobs as watchdogs, one institution to another institution, the legislative institution to the executive branch institution, and let the auditor do her work. By the way, an auditor who is audited herself, her in her division, and is subservient on a an hourly basis, every moment that they're working on an audit to professional accounting standards, peer reviewed, so they have to pass through all of those hoops to do their job. So, the inference that we're piling on work to these agencies in a sort of indiscriminate fashion just doesn't carry a lot of water with me. In the fact that we could take these statutes that were probably put together in the 60s, maybe, we don't know, 60s, 70s, maybe the 80s at the outset, and modernize them and try to get past this so that Department of Revenue would know it, sort of have more clarity in terms of what they need to do to work with the auditor to provide ultimately the Legislative Budget and Audit Committee and the legislature the ability to fulfill their watchdog duties as required by the Constitution. This seems to me to be a cleanup bill, sort of a technical fix you could ascertain, and I don't see any reason why we shouldn't do it and why we aren't sitting here lock, stock, and barrel defending the legislative institution, because our powers under the separation of powers, a federal doctrine, are pretty well established, and we should be fighting tooth and nail to make darn sure that the Department of Revenue is doing their job just as much as the Department of Revenue is reporting back to us that they are. So I think this bill, Madam Co-Chair, when we get to final comments, I'd like to amplify that a little bit more. But
certainly,
the issue of precedence and the courts looking at what the legislature has done in the past and what the auditor has done in the past, I think it's going to weigh heavily on any determination that they might make. And I think we just need to put all that into its proper context and focus and move on here.
Thank you. Before we move on to public testimony, are there other questions for either Ms. Curtis, for the good senator, or for Ms. Noman? Seeing none, we will go to public testimony. I will open public testimony. I see no one online, including the Commissioner of Department of Revenue, who chose not to attend this very important meeting. Do we have anyone here in the room that would like to testify? Seeing no one, I will close public testimony. I have received one amendment, and that amendment is by Representative Vance. Would you like to move your amendment, please?
I move amendment number one.
Object. And I will object for the purpose of discussion. Representative Vance.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. And as I was reviewing the bill and thinking about the authority in making sure that we are clear on the auditor's authority comes through the legislature, auditor's authority is clearly in the Constitution, but resides under the legislature. My amendment removes the word on page 3, division, that it would read in the form or format requested by the Legislative Budget and Audit Committee, so that it reaffirms that the authority that the auditor is making these requests is by the Legislative Budget and Audit Committee, so that if there is a question in the future about who is doing this, it is by the committee who is accountable to the public, and just being consistent with the other areas of statute.
Object.
Thank you. Comments, Representative Cobb.
Yeah, I think this amendment is misplaced and confuses duties with authority to direct. The committee has the authority to direct the auditor to go do a duty which we are not qualified to do. We're not CPAs. It's similar to a board of directors. Our one person we can direct to do something is Ms. Curtis, but she is the only one that can accept that as an official duty to do. She's qualified to do that duty. We as committee members are not. There's a host of duties that would only apply to an auditor with considerable experience. Our duty as a committee is very narrowly to request her to pursue audits. That's the way I see it, and I think by putting that under a section of law that talks about the duties of the division, it's very clearly we're talking about professional qualified people to do that, which the committee is a separate entity which has oversight of the one employee who is qualified. So based on that, I would object to the amendment.
Thank you. Representative Edgman.
Yeah, and I would join with the comments made by the Vice Chair. I think, you know, the bill before us makes, more technical changes, if you will. It sort of adds elements to what's already being done, but to enact this amendment would make a structural change, and I think that's beyond the scope of the bill before us. I think it's a whole different subject, and I don't think it's warranted, so I'll be opposing the amendment.
Thank you. Are there other comments insofar as the amendment? Representative Costello?
I have a question for Ms. Curtis. You would,
of course.
You had mentioned earlier that after you've been given instructions by the LBNA committee that you then do not have communication with legislators until you're done with the audit. Could you comment on how this change might affect that relationship and whether or not it would create a professional challenge for you? Because while I understand the intent of the amendment, I'm wondering if in the middle of an audit, if you're not getting the information in the format that you need, then you would have to go back to the committee and ask that they specifically ask for it in a particular format, and whether or not that's something that you would be able to do, that you believe that you could do.
Through the chair, that's my problem with this, is that it's impairing my independence by requiring that the committee request the information. That means I'd have to explain what I was doing. I'd have to rope in legislators during the audit process, which is a violation of professional auditing standards, and I could not do that.
Thank you. Other comments? In wrap-up, Representative Vance.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I feel like that's what's happening now.
Yeah.
And I feel like it creates transparency by... I mean, we're clearly we wouldn't know the problem. And I want to keep with the current practices. Mm-hmm. But I also want to highlight that the same wording of including assembling, generating, furnishing information in the format requested by the committees is also under the in Section 2 under the authority of the Legislative Budget Audit Committee. Mm-hmm. So we are amending that area of statute as well. And it is not just giving the authority to the division with those specific words, but the premise of me having this amendment is about the authority of the legislature via this committee, and also just the transparency of the public. As legislators, we are held accountable. We are elected by the people, held accountable by the people, and it makes sure that it's very clear legally where the auditor's authority comes from, mm-hmm. So that if there's any legal concern, that it's strong. Because obviously, what do we do if the executive branch doesn't follow the statute? It would have to be resolved in the courts, because them executing the law on themselves is highly unlikely. So I appreciate everyone's conversation and consideration of this, but that's the background of why I'm wanting to make sure that we're very clear on the authority that the auditor is working under in making these requests.
Thank you, and I will maintain my objection. So, Lori, would you please call the roll?
Representative Vance?
Yes.
Representative Costello? Representative Edgman?
No.
Representative Tilton?
Yes.
Again, please?
I'm sorry, yes.
Representative Schrage?
No.
Representative Kopp?
No.
Representative Costello?
Yes.
Chair Stutes?
No.
3 yea, 4 nay.
With 3 yea and 4 nay, Amendment number 1 has not been adopted. So, with that, I would certainly entertain any final comments from this committee.
Madam Chair.
Certainly, Representative Kopp.
Thank you. It's clear that Senate Bill 183 is clearly and fundamentally about the public good of this state of Alaska. And I am certain this is how courts would look at it, because it is fundamentally tied to our Constitution and legislative duty. Article 8, Natural Resources of our Constitution says the legislature shall provide for the utilization, development, and conservation of all natural resources belonging to the state, including lands and waters, for the maximum benefit of its people. The maximum benefit. There is no audit that is more material to understanding that the maximum benefit to the people when it comes to collecting revenue for the finances of our state treasury is more significant than the one we're talking about right now. The Legislative Audit Division's audit of the oil and tax group within the tax division of the Department of Revenue. We are talking about the legislature assuming a constitutional duty through a constitutionally derived position, the legislative auditor that is fundamentally tied to Article 8, Natural Resources. The legislature shall provide that our natural resources are used for the maximum benefit of its people. I cannot imagine a court not upholding this based on that and showing deference. And I hope our administration is paying careful attention, because the people are speaking, and we're not suggesting guilt or innocence or anything other than we want to exercise our equal, separate, but fundamental exercise of power under the Constitution, and we're serious about it. And I appreciate the bill sponsor bringing it forward.
Thank you. Representative Benjamin.
Yes, I view this bill as a cleanup bill. It sort of codifies what the practice has been for a long time in terms of doing audits that not only are authorized under Article 8 as the Vice Chair has alluded, but also Article 9, which talks about the specific powers of the legislative post-audit. I also would note in closing my comments that I think this bill, this whole matter sort of also underlies the, you know, the inefficiency of fiscal notes or the inability of fiscal notes to capture what could happen if we don't do this right. And it's not just the cost incurred upon the state agencies to do it right, to maybe to put in extra time, but the amount of money that could be at stake to the state treasury at a time when we're facing sort of, you know, we're facing deficits this year and into the future that are going to be very difficult to overcome. So I think the stakes are pretty high with this legislation. I think it's a matter of good governance, and I strongly and wholeheartedly support it.
Thank you. Other comments? I think I will make a slight comment. You know, this is very, very crucial legislation, very impactful not only to us as a committee, but to the people of Alaska. This pertains to their oil and gas money as well as what supports the state. And I find it appalling, absolutely appalling, that our Commissioner of Revenue could not manage to be here, even if not in person, calling in. That to me speaks very loudly, and it's very disconcerting. And I just want to say that. Senator Gray Jackson, we appreciate you bringing this forward, and I would like to know if you have any closing comments.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I thank the committee for hearing this bill, and I really appreciate the conversation. But for the committee and also for the public listening, I want to stress, as Chair of Legislative Budget and Audit, that this bill does not give the legislative auditor any additional authority. What this bill simply does is clarifies the authority that the legislative auditor already has. Again, thank you for hearing this bill.
Thank you. And with that, I would entertain a motion.
Madam Chair, I move to report Senate Bill 183-34-LS0932-A out of committee with individual recommendations and attached fiscal notes.
Are there any objections? Hearing none. Senate Bill 183-LS0932-A is reported out of committee with individual recommendations and attached fiscal notes. I thank you all for attending this rules meeting this morning, and that will conclude our business at 10:23.